Katra Foundation presents the Katra Dialogue, an exploration of the world's greatest thinkers and ideas. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're exploring a story that, well, has touched millions, a voice from the past that still speaks so clearly today. We're diving into the world of Anne Frank.
Yeah, specifically, we're looking at the Diary of a Young Girl. And this isn't just history, though it absolutely is vital history. It's more personal. It's about growing up, finding hope, figuring out who you are, all under, well, unimaginable pressure. Our goal here is to really pull out the core insights from her diary. How did this teenager manage to hold on to her humanity, her spirit, and leave behind something so powerful? We're using a structured summary of the diary to guide us. So let's start at the beginning. Anne Frank. Born Annelise Marie Frank, June 12, 1929, in Frankfurt, Germany, middle-class Jewish family.
Right, and crucially, her father Otto saw the writing on the wall pretty early. With the Nazis rising, he moved the family to Amsterdam in 1933, trying to find safety.
A move made out of hope.
But yeah.
Yeah. And that's what makes her perspective so unique. She's not a historian looking back. She's in it. Her authority comes straight from that lived experience. You know, she had this incredible knack for writing, this sharp intelligence, but also this youthful honesty.
Completely unfiltered.
Exactly. She wrote because she had to, almost. It gives us this immediate window into her reality without any adult filter or historical hindsight. That's why it hits so hard.
And amidst all this looming danger, there are these glimpses of, well, just normal teenage life. She got her diary, the famous red checkered one she called Kitty, for her 13th birthday. June 12, 1942.
Yeah, and those first entries, totally relatable. Worries about friends, crushes, family squabbles. She mentions being talkative, maybe a bit of a chatterbox at school.
It makes the contrast even sharper, doesn't it? That everyday kid stuff happening right as the world is closing in.
It's chilling, because while she's writing about school gossip, the Nazi occupation in the Netherlands is tightening its grip. These weren't just abstract laws. They were deliberately stripping away rights day by day.
The yellow stars.
Yellow stars, banned from trams, parks, cinemas, kicked out of public schools. It was systematic, pushing Jewish people right to the edge of society, isolating them, preparing the ground for something worse.
And then came the moment that changed everything. July 5, 1942. Her oldest sister, Margot, gets a call-up notice from the SS.
Mm-hmm. An order to report for deportation to a so-called labor camp. But the Franks knew what that really meant. It wasn't about labor.
It forced their hand. They had already been planning to go into hiding, but this accelerated everything.
Massively. The very next day, July 6th, they left. Just like that. Imagine the fear, the rush. They couldn't even pack suitcases. That would look too suspicious. So they wore layers and layers of clothes in the middle of summer.
Unbelievable. And their destination was the secret annex.
Right, these hidden rooms behind a bookcase in Otto Frank's business building. And soon, they weren't alone. The Van Pels family joined them. Anne calls them the Van Danes in the diary.
And later, Fritz Pfeffer, the dentist she called Dussel.
Exactly. Eight people. Their entire world suddenly shrinking down to those few hidden rooms. Life utterly dependent on staying invisible, staying silent.
Okay, let's really try and picture that. Life in the annex. Eight people crammed together, and the silence, that absolute enforced silence during business hours.
The pressure must have been immense. Every single sound, a cough, a floorboard creak could be fatal.
How does Anne describe just the, you know, the day-to-day reality of that?
Well, that's where her diary becomes so incredibly vivid. Early on, you really sense the huge psychological weight. The sheer boredom punctured by these petty arguments. Food was always a big one. Chores.
Understandable, I suppose.
Absolutely. Claustrophobia and always, always that underlying fear of being discovered. And she doesn't hold back on her observations of the others. She clashes often with her mother, Edith, feeling misunderstood. She finds Mrs. Van Pels vain, Mr. Van Pels difficult, and poor Fritz Pfeffer, who she had to share a room with, she found him pedantic.
Yeah, that line, paper has more patience than people. It says it all, really.
Yeah, it perfectly captures it. The diary wasn't just a record. It was her lifeline. Her only truly private space to vent, to process, to just be when she felt so utterly alone and trapped. Her confidant.
A powerful outlet.
Yeah.
But they weren't completely cut off, were they?
Yeah.
There were the helpers.
Oh, absolutely crucial. Mia Gies, Bep Voskal, Johannes Kleiman, Victor Kugler. These incredibly brave people risked everything, every single day.
Bringing food, supplies.
Food, books, news. That news was vital. Their only real link to the outside world, besides the radio.
The radio must have been everything.
It was their connection to the war's progress, their hope for liberation. Anne writes about listening intently, hanging on every piece of news. It was their window, however small, onto the world they desperately wanted back.
Okay, so as time goes on in the annex, something really starts to shift in Anne herself, in her writing.
Yes, definitely. Around the second year, you see this remarkable leap. She's not just a girl recording events anymore. She's becoming incredibly introspective, almost philosophical.
She starts thinking more deeply about everything.
Everything. You see her analyzing herself, her own feelings. She makes this distinction, you know, between the outer Anne, the cheerful, sometimes bubbly girl people saw, and the inner Anne.
The deeper self.
Exactly. The more serious, thoughtful person she felt she truly was. And Kitty, her diary, was the only one she revealed that inner Anne to. It became this space for radical self-acceptance, really, finding her identity when her whole world was trying to erase it.
That's profound.
Yeah.
And within that pressure cooker, something else very human happened. The connection with Peter Van Pels.
Right. At first, she found him kind of shy, maybe a bit awkward. But they were both so lonely, they started spending time together, talking for hours up in the attic.
Finding comfort in each other.
Definitely. There was a growing affection, eventually their first kiss. In that completely abnormal world, it was this small anchor to normalcy, to intimacy, connection, a tiny rebellion of humanity against the darkness.
And beyond the personal, her thoughts really broadened, didn't they?
Massively. She starts grappling with these huge questions: war, human nature, why people suffer, religion, even ideas about women's roles. Early feminism, you could say.
And she had ambitions. Big ones.
Oh, yeah. She explicitly states she wants to be a writer, a journalist. She writes that famous line about wanting to go on living even after my death. It's just incredible, that forward-looking drive in those circumstances.
Amazing. Huh? And that ambition actually changed how she approached the diary itself, right?
Yes. That was a key turning point. In March 1944, she heard this broadcast. A Dutch minister in exile, Gerrit Bolkestein, was urging people to save their wartime diaries and letters. For posterity.
Like for the historical record.
Exactly. And for Anne, this was like a light bulb moment. It gave her writing a whole new purpose. She started revising her entries, editing them, shaping them.
With publication in mind.
Yes. She even came up with a title, The Secret Annex. So it shifted from being just her private journal to becoming a conscious testimony, a historical document she was preparing for the future. That takes incredible foresight and belief in her own voice.
So now we're moving into her final months in hiding. And her writing is showing this incredible maturity, this strength. And there's actually a sense of hope, isn't there? Especially after D-Day.
Oh, absolutely. The news of the Allied landings in Normandy in June 1944 created this huge wave of optimism. You can feel it in her writing. They genuinely believed liberation was just around the corner.
And it's during this period that we see her most profound insights emerge.
Definitely. This is where you see her incredible resilience distilled. I mean, despite the constant fear, the shortages, knowing about the horrors outside, she actively chose joy in small things. She refused to let the situation break her spirit.
It wasn't just passive waiting. It was an active choice.
A very active, conscious choice. And that leads to arguably her most famous quote, written just weeks before the end, July 15th, 1944. I still believe, in spite of everything, that people are really good at heart.
It's such a powerful statement. Almost unbelievable given what she knew, what she was living through.
It is. And it's not naive optimism. It's a deliberate defiance of the hatred and despair surrounding her. It's an act of will.
Do you think? I mean, did she ever doubt that? Does the diary show her struggling with that belief?
Oh, absolutely. She wasn't superhuman. She had moments of deep sadness, anger, fear, despair. But the diary was her tool for processing it, for wrestling with those feelings, and then somehow reaffirming her belief in good.
Writing is survival.
Precisely. It was resistance. It preserved her identity, her mental freedom. And she had this incredibly nuanced view of people, too. She saw the good and the bad right there in the annex, how people could be selfish one moment, generous the next, petty, then noble. Her grasp of human complexity was extraordinary for her age.
She also wrote things like, how wonderful it is that nobody need wait a single moment before starting to improve the world.
Right. And I have often been downcast, but never in despair. It shows this belief in personal agency, you know, that even in the worst situations, you have some control over your inner response, your actions, incredible psychological strength.
But then, that vibrant voice, those deep thoughts, it just stops. August 1st, 1944 is the last entry.
Yeah, she writes about feeling like a bundle of contradictions, struggling to show her deeper self, and then silence.
Because 3 days later.
3 days later, August 4th, 1944, the annex was raided. An anonymous tip-off, still unknown who it was. All eight people arrested, deported.
And only Otto Frank survived.
Only Otto. Anne and Margot died of typhus in Bergen-Belsen, likely in February or March 1945, just weeks before the Campbells liberated. But Miep Gies, one of the helpers, went back to the annex after the raid. She found the diary scattered on the floor. She saved it.
Preserving Anne's wish to live on.
In the most heartbreaking way possible, yes.
So, thinking about all this, what does Anne Frank's story mean for us right here, right now? It feels more than just history.
Oh, absolutely. Its relevance is timeless. Think about personal resilience, mental health, her daily habit of reflection, using writing as expression, finding gratitude in tiny things, keeping routines, even in chaos. These are all powerful coping strategies we can learn from when facing any kind of adversity or isolation.
Using journaling as a tool for self-preservation.
Exactly. And then there's empathy. Her personal story makes the Holocaust intensely human, relatable. It helps us grasp the real cost of prejudice and hatred far more than just numbers can.
It definitely makes you appreciate basic freedoms more.
For sure. Her account of confinement is a stark reminder not to take freedom and human rights for granted. We need to actively protect them. And the helpers, Miep Gies and the others, their moral courage is a huge lesson.
Choosing to act, not just stand by.
Right. Being an upstander. Their example challenges us all. And finally, just the sheer power of finding and using your voice. Anne's diary shows how self-expression, like journaling, can be vital for self-awareness, for navigating challenges, for claiming your identity.
It really is incredible how much strength you can find within, even when the outside world is falling apart. So if someone listening feels, you know, overwhelmed or isolated today, what's maybe one concrete thing Anne's story suggests?
I'd say find your own kitty. Find that safe space. Maybe it's a notebook. Maybe it's talking to someone you trust. Maybe it's art or music where you can be truly yourself, process your thoughts and feelings without judgment, and prove that even when your physical space shrinks, your inner world can still flourish. And that act of expression is itself a form of strength, of resistance.
Anne Frank's diary really stands as this incredible monument to human dignity, to hope against all odds, and proof that one voice, one young voice, can echo through history and illuminate so much.
It truly does. And it leaves us with a powerful question to reflect on, doesn't it? Anne, facing unimaginable evil, made a conscious choice to believe in human goodness and a better future. What does it take for us, facing our own modern challenges, to make that same conscious choice for hope? And how does that single choice, repeated daily, shape not just our own lives, but the world we collectively create?
Join us next time for a new episode, featuring another world-renowned individual, a new book, and a new idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.